Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The state cannot afford to pay for the dozens upon dozens of highway construction projects proposed for coming years in Ohio. Some will be delayed for as long as two decades. Others have even less hope. The Transportation Review Advisory Council yesterday voted unanimously to accept a draft list of major new projects throughout the state and also launch a 45-day written public comment period to decide the winners and losers. There may also be a couple public hearings on the topic, but those have not been set, and that is not for sure. Coming up later, we'll hear from two Ohio cities, Cleveland and Worthington, where major projects set to get started in the next few years have been delayed many years. We'll also hear from a spokesman for a nationwide organization of highway and transportation officials to see how other states are managing the same blow as costs rise and gas tax revenue drops. Right now, to get the latest on the highway construction issue is Cleveland Plain Dealer Columbus Bureau Chief Reggie Fields. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So the Transportation Review Advisory Council issued three tiers of construction proposals. Even most in the top tier, which are considered very high priority, are being pushed back several years, in some cases as long as two decades.
Yeah, and it's pretty much a math issue here. I mean, the ODOT has about $3.3 billion in projects, road and infrastructure projects, promised through 2017, but look to only have maybe about $1.6 billion available to spend. And so this has been a problem that has been a long time coming. Several governors and administrations have known that there isn't money there to maybe fulfill many of the promises that have been made through the years, and yet they just kind of kept kicking the can down the road, so to speak, and just making money available as they got money to just kind of keep on pushing projects along slowly, incrementally. But now we're to the point where some of these projects are coming to a completion, and there's no money to do it, and there's time to start new projects, and there's no money to do it, and something had to give.
So in that first tier, what are we looking at?
Well, most of it is what the administration has said, ODOT has said, are going to be projects that are ready right now to go out for bidding.
Shovel-ready.
Shovel-ready projects. So if a project is ready to go right now, then it's going to get the first priority for funding. And in doing so, by taking that new approach and sort of going for those projects, then it means that they're only committing themselves to spend monies that they know they're going to have available over the next few years. And therefore, they're pushing other projects, such as the Interbelt project, which has gotten a lot of attention in
Cleveland,
area, it's delaying it permanently in some cases, or more than a decade in some cases.
Well, the amounts that they're using, and I'll be talking to a Cleveland official, chief of staff for the mayor of Cleveland, and also Matt Greason, a city manager from Worthington, in a few minutes, but they're pushing back the start dates for a lot of these projects by sometimes as long as two decades in some cases, but the amounts of what they need to complete the projects have not necessarily changed, and in some cases have been reduced. And that's 15 or 20 years down the road. I mean, hypothetically, wouldn't the prices increase over the course of 15 years, the cost is going to go up?
Sure. I mean, with inflation and so forth, and also the money that comes in that ODOT uses right now for the road projects, the fuel tax, the federal and state gas fuel tax, those numbers are also in decline and are not expected to necessarily increase. So the money's available. You're correct. I mean, the projects in theory are going to become more expensive as you delay them longer, but that does not necessarily mean that there's going to be more revenue later down the line to complete these projects. And so you've got several options on the table. I mean, Congress right now is going through a new transportation bill that many states, not just Ohio, but many states are hoping it's going to,
been delayed eight times already,
And then also the fuel tax itself. Does the governor want to raise the state fuel tax? He says absolutely not. So,
okay. Let's talk about that. Jerry Ray, the director of Ohio Department of Transportation, warned a few weeks ago in an interview with Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler that they are looking at different sources of funding, including public-private partnerships.
We're interested in privatizing some of our rest areas, where that way we could turn something that is currently costing us money, perhaps into revenue. Obviously, we're considering what we might be able to do to leverage the turnpike.
Okay, leveraging the turnpike. That has been a bone of contention up in Northeast Ohio. Like I said, we're going to be talking to the chief of staff for the mayor of Cleveland, but can you give us a primer on what the conflict is up there regarding the turnpike and the funding for the big projects in that area?
Well, as most folks know, I mean, a turnpike 241-mile toll road that runs across the northern part of the state has always been paid for by the toll monies that come in. And so you have a lot of residents and people who live in that area who feel they have a sense of ownership of that road and do not like the idea at all of the state coming in, leasing it, procuring, several billion dollars, but then spreading the money across the entire state for something that they feel like they, took care of and built, through the years. And so it is not a popular idea. This is something that the governor has come – he came in when he came into office. This is one of the many items that he looked to privatize, and he is still doing – he's looking to do it even as we speak. There's a consultant already studying that very issue. And immediately when money – again, going back to the Innerbelt project, when it was announced a couple of weeks ago that the money was not going to be there to complete that project to its full completion for at least a decade at this point, many in Northeast Ohio, both Democrats and Republican, really thought it was sort of a political play by the governor to try to, force or sway opinion on his idea of leasing a turnpike up there. Now, the governor's office, of course, says that's not the issue. This is just strictly a cash issue. There's no cash here, for the ODOT projects. But certainly, as you just heard in that clip from Jerry Ray, that is a huge chip that's still on the table for the administration to consider, using to get some funds right away for many of these projects that are being delayed indefinitely.
My guest is Reggie Fields. He's the Cleveland Plain Dealer Columbus Bureau Chief. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about ODOT and the cuts ahead, or the cuts in front of us over the next 45 days. There's a public comment period, public comment period. If you have a question or comment for Reggie right now, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post there as well. So let's get back to those ideas. Privatizing some of the rest areas, they're actually talking about selling them. And, of course, these are interstate rest areas or state rest areas. They can't do this with interstate rest areas, but with state routes they mm-hmm. can do that. What are some other things?
Well, again, I mean, going back, you have that in terms of the road projects, mm-hmm. the turnpike, which we just discussed,
right.
the fuel tax, the gasoline tax. It's a big issue.
Has anyone polled on that? Do we know if Ohioans would favor an increase in the state gas tax? It hasn't been increased since 1993. Does anybody know?
I don't know. I don't know an answer to that. I do know that our current governor is adamant that he does not want to do anything that reflects any sort of a tax increase. And so they're immediately saying that is off the table. It is. However, there are some economists around the state who follow these issues who will tell you that Ohio, like many other states, is long overdue for increasing the gas tax to keep up with many of these projects, these road projects and such. And you got to remember, we're in an election year also, and so we're seeing a lot of the individuals.
Oh, are we? I'm sorry, I forgot.
You're seeing a lot of the individuals who are now up for re-election, especially in Congress, are now making this a campaign issue for them, that they're lobbying to get this transportation bill, which you have noted has been delayed so many times. They're making it a campaign issue to show their constituents that we're really lobbying to get this done so we can bring some money back home and address these issues. You can't understate this. I mean, this goes back to being what really is a quality of life issue, for many people. I mean, when you're just traveling on the roads or across bridges or especially across the highways and such, if all of a sudden these roads and bridges and such are deteriorating and it's causing lengthy delays and other issues, people do not like, to be inconvenienced in that way.
Well, there's also been studies out there, and I'll be talking about this later on, but that show that the infrastructure across the country is deteriorating. We've built something that we can't take care of.
Right. Right. And the other issue that should be that's really kind of the undercurrent of all this is there's a lot of finger pointing going on. It's who's to blame for this? You know, why now? Why is this becoming an issue if we have known all along that perhaps the money wasn't going to be there?
Jerry Ray was ODOT director back during the Voinovich administration and for a period during the Taft administration, I believe. Is this something that he talked about back then?
I don't know that he did. I know that they ODOT certainly was aware that it was going to have some financial issues maybe going forward to complete many of these projects because, again, this is not something that ODOT or even previous governors have just, you know, kind of stumbled upon. Ted Strickland, our previous governor, he took office in January of 2007, and one of his first speeches he gave early in his tenure addressed this very topic, kind of coming across saying, listen, this is going to be a major issue later for ODOT because we have all this money promised for these projects and there just isn't the money there. He said that, what, now 5 years ago, and here we are addressing it. And it was an issue well before Ted Strickland took office as well, going back to, as you pointed out, the Voinovich and the Taft years as well.
Okay, so Ted Strickland said that early on when he first took office, but they still popped out another ODOT budget.
Right,
you know,
right. Didn't
which
do
is
it.
A separate.
Right, yeah. And what Governor Kasich, our current governor, what he is now saying is that enough was enough. Someone had to stop all this. We had to stop promising something that we weren't going to be able to deliver upon. And so, in a way, he's taking credit for maybe, you know, being accountable in the sense of making sure that people understand the problem. But at the same time, he's taken a lot of heat for it because it's not easy to convince many of these city leaders across the state that, one, that the money isn't there, and two, that other projects are more needy or more necessary than maybe what their project, which is being, you know, permanently delayed at this point.
To what extent does the governor need approval by the Northeast region for privatizing or leasing out the turnpike?
I don't know.
What's the process for that?
Yeah, I don't know that he, it's a very good question. I'm not sure. I think he more or less has to, once they come up with an idea, it's more or less a legislative issue. I don't know that he needs so much of regional approval. Now, you would like to have regional approval from a public relations standpoint. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he needs that from them to if he was going to push this project through. Again, a consultant is now studying the issue, and the consultant's job is essentially to figure out right now, how much would Ohio be able to, you know, obtain should it, you know, lease out the turnpike? And I believe there is a legislative process where he would need the legislature to sort of approve and to move forward in that regard.
Okay. Reggie Fields, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Columbus Bureau Chief, you're going to stay with us for the next segment. Coming up, we'll hear from Cleveland and Worthington. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. 97 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media will host Chefs in the City Thursday, May 3rd from 5:30 until 10 p.m. at WOSU at COSI. Tickets are on sale now. Celebrity chef Hubert Keller and several of Central Ohio's finest chefs will participate in live cooking demonstrations, preparing dishes for audience members to enjoy. The event will also feature a cookbook signing, a silent auction, and will be taped for TV. A limited number of tickets are on sale now. Visit WOSU.org/chefs for more information.
And this is 89.7 NPR News, 53 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds and sunshine today and a high near 60 degrees. Not bad for the first day of February. Partly cloudy skies for tonight, a low of 34 degrees. Partly sunny for Thursday and a high of 50. And looking ahead to Friday, more sunshine and a high of 51. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
When the Ohio Department of Transportation announced plans last month to delay major highway projects across the state, officials in the affected counties, cities, and townships fumed. In Cleveland, some are suspicious that the Kasich administration is using highway funding delays for the long-planned Interbelt Bridge project there to drum up support for his Ohio Turnpike leasing idea. In central Ohio, the area just north of Worthington, around 270 and routes 23 and 315, where in 2014 work was supposed to begin on $250 million in upgrades, won't see a shovel along a period of about 10 years, ending in 2031, according to a draft list of projects approved last night by ODOT's Transportation Review Advisory Council. Joining us now to share their concerns is Worthington City Manager Matt Greason. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Good morning.
Also with us by phone is Ken Silliman. He's Chief of Staff for Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Good morning, Ann.
Ken, tell us about the Interbelt and Interbelt Bridge project in Cleveland and how it's affected by if this draft list comes to fruition, such as, if that's the way to put it.
Well, the Interbelt Bridge is in downtown Cleveland, and it is one of, by my count, 16 places in the U.S. where three interstate highways come together. So right away, it's a unique and important national intersection. Interstates 71, 77, and 90 all come together, and all that traffic heads east over what we call the Interbelt Bridge. Now, the Interbelt Bridge is old. It has reached its useful life. It is the exact same design as the bridge that collapsed in Minneapolis. So ODOT properly has been working to make this project a priority, and it came up several years ago with a plan to replace the Interbelt Bridge with two new bridges, one westbound, which is under construction now and will complete in 2013, but the other equally important eastbound, and that's what's at issue here.
So what happens? What is the plan as far as the draft list goes at this point?
Okay, let me first tell you what the plan was until the list came out this last month. The plan was to complete the West Bridge in 2013, and that is on schedule. But that is designed only to handle westbound traffic. So the further plans were to, in 2013, demolish the existing bridge and complete within 3 years, by 2016, a new eastbound bridge. And then you have the westbound new bridge carrying westbound traffic, eastbound carrying eastbound traffic. That was something we could live with, and that was the plan. With the new funding plan that was announced several weeks ago, the eastbound bridge is delayed until the year 2023 for funding, and that probably means 2025 or 2026 for construction. That means Cleveland is looking at about a dozen years of carrying traffic both ways on the westbound bridge, which was only designed for westbound traffic. And given that we are, again, one of 16 places in the U.S. where three interstates intersect, and that intersection is key to Cleveland's economy, that arrangement is completely unacceptable to Mayor Jackson and to those of us in Cleveland.
Is there a concern that the bridge won't be safe?
Well, we have yet to hear from ODOT on how they plan to extend. I think their current plans are to keep the existing bridge going for another 5 years, but they'll need to make more improvements to do that. But even if they do that, then once they demolish the old bridge, which is planned in 2018, you're still looking at between 2018 and 2026, where you have one new bridge that's designed to carry half the traffic. And that is unacceptable economically for the Cleveland region.
We talked about this earlier. Some have accused the governor and the Kasich administration of using the construction delays to strong-arm Northeast Ohio into supporting his idea to lease the Ohio Turnpike.
Well, we're about fixing the problem, not fixing the blame. The turnpike option is one that the governor is studying, and we're willing to see how that review comes out. But even the governor's spokespeople have indicated that they won't do a turnpike deal unless the finances come out right. So it's far from a certainty, and what Cleveland needs right now are certainties. So we need to look at other possible means of solving this.
Have you heard from anybody looking to locate their businesses in Cleveland? Is anybody concerned? Has there been any, at this point, outward show of concern from outside the state that, I don't know, maybe we're not going to go there if they can't build the bridge?
It's too early to say how businesses are reacting. I think we're all still in a state of shock right now. But, again, when you're talking about this being one of 16 key intersections in the whole country, and it's really the lifeblood of Cleveland's commerce, being choked to half its capacity for 8 years, that just doesn't work.
Matt Greeson, tell us about what is planned at the conversion of I-270 routes 23 and 315 near Worthington there.
Well, thanks, Ann. This is called the North Central Outer Belt Study Area. It's at the 12 o'clock noon point in the Central Ohio area, right in the heart of a high-growth part of this state, southern Delaware County, Worthington, between Dublin and Westerville. The project entails a whole series of improvements that include the interchange of 270 and 315, the High Street, the backbone of Central Ohio, interchange with 270, and improvements all the way over to 71. So a lot of major Central Ohio intersections and roads coming together. It's about $237 million worth of projects, $167 million on the Tier 1 track, Transportation Review Advisory.
High priority.
Right. High-priority projects, four of them, all that are part of this North Central Outer Belt project. They're going to improve the 23-270 interchange. They're going to improve the 315-270 interchange. They're going to widen High Street north of the 23-270 interchange, and they're going to replace the Linworth Bridge.
But they're not going to get started in 2014 like you expected.
Right. They were going to start in 2014.
I'm sorry, 2014, yeah.
Right. Start in 2014. Now a small part of it would start in 2020. The bulk of it wouldn't start for 14 years and after they originally planned until 2028.
What does that mean to the community at this point?
Well,
are you in a state of shock as well? Or
sure. We have been doing a lot of land use planning. We've been anticipating and coordinating this project and coordinating with ODOT, anticipating that it would help change some of the problems that occur on a daily basis as a result of congestion and safety issues, but also provide some economic infusion at a time in which we need it. It's according to an ODOT study in 2004, it was the fourth most congested and high crash location in Ohio. My fire department responded to 215 crashes last year, and we're only one of the responding agencies on that segment of roadway, and it's important to see that fixed.
614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. The issue's been brought up that everybody thinks their project's the most important project. Ken Silliman, how do you respond to that?
Well, Mayor Jackson is understanding of the many cities and counties in Ohio that are caught off guard by this latest development. And I listened to the needs in Worthington, and they're very real and legitimate. I do think that the Inner Belt project is the most important project in the state of Ohio for the reason I indicated before, And, you know, we've heard a lot in the last month about the Governor's Jobs Ohio program, and that's an important program. But compared to this, it pales. And to me, I would rather see some of that money come out of Jobs Ohio and deal with critical infrastructure out of the state, because that infrastructure is going to have far more impact on Ohio's economy and jobs than any incentive under Jobs Ohio would.
Public-private construction partnerships and private investment are pillars of the governor's plan to generate revenue in the future, and local investment in projects will be part of the scoring mechanism as the Transportation Review Advisory Council moves forward to finalize the construction schedule. Matt Greason, what about in the Worthington area? Any thought given to that for local, the locals pitching in or generating private investment?
Well, I certainly think there's some private investment that's happening as a result of in that area and would happen as a result of this project. It's an interesting challenge. I mean, you're talking about $237 million worth of improvements in a basically urbanized, built-out area, $167 million on the track, and we're a 14,000-person community. Do you ask communities like ours to try to move to the front of the line by investing a lot of local resources? I think that's challenging. They already place an emphasis on local investment, and there is some that Worthington is investing, particularly in some of the quality of life aspects of the project, pedestrian features, aesthetics, things like that. But it's multi-jurisdictional. This is Columbus, it's Sharon Township, it's Worthington, and it's at the levels of the costs of these projects. I think it's an awful lot to ask small communities to basically pay to get their project moved up when they have merit already.
What about Cleveland, Ken Silliman?
Well, we have said to several ODOT directors that local investment factor favors exurban sprawl and private land developers who stand to gain by investing in an interchange, and it penalizes build-up urban areas that are already trying to manage their resources. So we have consistently urged that be lessened as a evaluation factor.
James from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, just as a general public, and I'm a taxpayer, I really am against him privatizing it, because if he privatizes, it's kind of a different way to funnel money.
You're talking about the turnpike.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I think it's really just a different way to funnel money and kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, steal or do whatever you want. Because when it's private, you can't ask a private company anything. But when you have to go through government, there's government regulators, there's people you have to answer to. So, it's almost the same thing of like what he did with his home, you know, while we're paying for the mansion, you know, and he's got an upgrade for his house and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, we're paying for private parties at the mansion. It's just a different way to funnel money. And I was wondering, on our end, just as a taxpayer, what can we do to stop what he's trying to do?
Reggie Wilkinson, what recourse does – I'm sorry, it's Reggie Fields. What recourse does the public have, you know, to stop something like this?
I don't know that the public has a lot other than maybe going to your state legislature. Again, if he's going to lease this out, there is a mechanism where he's going to have to get approval from the state legislature. Now, it hasn't been difficult at all for this governor to get anything he wants through the legislature to this point. And I don't know that would necessarily change much. But what's interesting about all of this is there has to be – if there isn't a solution immediately sort of found to address this problem, then all we're essentially going to be doing is just pushing it on to next administrations, next generations. Because, again, we're talking about pushing these things, pushing projects more than a decade out or so, when this governor, this legislature, you know, many of the elected officials locally are probably won't even still be in their current positions.
Bob Vitale, the Columbus Dispatch, joked perhaps we'll all be using jetpacks by then. James, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Ken, The city and regional leaders have ranked Cleveland's West Shoreway project as a top priority, but an ODOT spokesman has said that given that ODOT has already committed $50 million to the project, more will be hard to come by. So they're pretty much dissing that project from now on. What's your reaction to that?
It gets worse than that.
Okay.
That's what we were hearing last December.
Yeah.
And that's when ODOT Director Jerry Ray came up to Cleveland and met with Mayor Jackson to talk about how the state could be helpful in funding Phase 2 of the Shoreway project. The total project is $85 million. $50 million was committed back in 2004 by Governor Taft, and we had a $35 million gap to solve for. We had worked throughout January with the director's office on various options for funding Phase 2, only to find out several weeks ago that they pulled the rug out from under Phase 1 by deferring $34 million of the $50 million that Governor Taft gave us back to the year 2027. That, to me, is bad faith in negotiations when you're negotiating with us on funding Phase 2 without telling us you're pulling the rug out from Phase 1.
Matt Greason, there's 45 days of a public written comment period. What's the city of Worthington going to do or not?
Well, we've already started engaging some of the stakeholders who are interested in the project, business leaders, Chamber of Commerce, some of the other governmental entities that are around us. And we plan to have a lot of conversations with transportation planners and the Department of Transportation staff to figure out how we go forward. Are there going to be changes in the criteria? Is there going to be any reprioritization of the track projects, the Transportation Review Advisory Council list? There hasn't been any changes in the priorities. It's just been a shift of when the funding
start dates
is.
And, yeah.
Right. And what are solutions that are viable and reasonable that we might be able to support? I'm hopeful that there's going to be a statewide discussion about this issue, that all these voices about their projects build an awareness of the lack of funding for transportation infrastructure, and that we start to see some viable solutions that help move the states and for that matter, the country's biggest projects forward.
Ken Silliman in Cleveland, any plans? Are you you said you're still in a state of shock, so.
Well, I would agree with the comments from Worthington, and I think what we're going to urge is that every funding source be put on the table here. I mean, we've heard about Cleveland. We've heard about Worthington. I know that Hamilton County,
sure.
I know that Dayton and Columbus and all kinds of communities have issues. And we need to work with the state of Ohio, work with the governor, and work with our congressional delegations and our state legislators to identify new funding sources so we can have a responsible transportation investment policy for the whole state. The dollars that are on the table now are clearly inadequate for the state's needs, and we need to recognize that and identify new sources. And I will say, as I said before, that Jobs Ohio should be in that mix, because what has more impact on jobs than key infrastructure? And some of that money, I think, should be considered for being invested in transportation.
Ken Silliman, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ken Silliman, he's chief of staff for Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson. Also, Matt Greason, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Matt is the Worthington City Manager, and Reggie Fields, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Columbus Bureau Chief, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Coming up, we're going to get a little bit more of a national scope of the issue, so stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Join Kappa, WOSU, and Capital Crossroads SID for a special screening of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton Downtown, at the Ohio Theater on Tuesday, February 14th. The program begins with the Ohio Mighty Morgan organ pre-show at 11:30 a.m. Pre-sale tickets include a fresh box lunch and the chance to win tickets to the Broadway series production of Memphis. For tickets to the screening, call Kappa at 614-469-0939 or visit columbusneighborhoods.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. And the discussion, race, are we so different? The science, history, and everyday issues of race and racism. That discussion is on All Sides at 11 on 89.7. And remember, you can listen to our station anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top of the page. Listen to local and national news from your computer or mobile device. Anytime, it's easy. Just visit WOSU.org. 53 degrees with some clouds in downtown Columbus. Clouds and sunshine for today and a high near 60 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 34. Partly sunny on Thursday and a high right around 50. Clouds Thursday night, a low of 31. More sunshine looking ahead to Friday and a high of 51 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Jean Krebs, a former state representative and now head of Greater Ohio, a think tank that studies transportation issues in Ohio, said that they aren't surprised by the funding drop-off for highway construction projects in Ohio. He told Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler that by his math, factoring in more efficient cars and inflation, ODOT will lose 7% of its purchasing power every year, meaning if the solution were to hike the gas tax, it would have to go up 2 cents every year.
By the way, that's 2 pennies a year forever. If you want to go ahead and start fixing all of our crumbling bridges and the backlog, that's 9 pennies a year for the very long foreseeable future. So we're not going to be able to tax ourselves out of this.
And Ohio is not alone. Joining us now to talk about the nation as a whole and how other states are coping is Peter Jack Bassel. He is the Director of Program Finance and Management at the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Before that, he was Assistant Secretary for Budget and Programs and also Chief Financial Officer of the U.S. Department of Transportation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ann, for having me.
Is every other state suffering as much as Ohio right now in terms of higher costs and lower revenues, and was it such a shock?
Yes, I think, let me start with the federal government. The federal government is experiencing that same thing. The Highway Trust Fund, which supports all the national programs out of here, has actually, the last 3 years, run into deficit and had to have almost $35 billion taken from the general fund just to pay the bills in there. So, and states, likewise, many, many states are experiencing the same kinds of issues. I'll give you an example here in this area, Maryland, where I have some involvement here locally right now, is in the throes of making a major proposal for increased revenue because of the huge kind of backlog and deficit they're facing. And you can get that pattern across the country.
There's a long-term transportation bill pending in Washington. It's in its eighth extension now. What's the holdup there, and how would passage of that change the outlook for states at this point?
Well, yeah, the main holdup here has been finding enough money to even maintain the current program levels, and I'll give you a statistic, a couple of statistics. One, currently the federal highway and transit programs, the mass transit programs, account for about $320 billion over 6 years, or an average of about $50 to $55 billion a year coming out of here. As far as the relationship with the states, that represents, from the federal level, about 45% of their capital investment programs. It's very substantial. So that being the case, and those revenues really not keeping pace with that level of funding, I'll give you another twist on that. If we don't find more revenue by the time the next federal fiscal year starts next October, we're going to be facing reducing the highway program by probably somewhere in the range of about 60%. In other words, going from about $40 billion a year down to something like about $12 billion a year. And it will come back up in subsequent years somewhat, but big, big problem. More revenue is necessary at the federal level, and of course that impacts the states based on the fact I just told you it's about 45% of the capital going out there.
How much is this a fact, function of the fact that we built stuff that we just couldn't afford to take care of?
I think probably I wouldn't state it that way. I'd state it this way, that we have built systems, and the original premise, for example, of the interstate system was the federal government would pay most of the cost of it, the states would own it, and then the maintenance would be the state's problem in the future, which was fine in the first 20 years of that, but we're at a point now where some of that system's 50 years old, and the costs, obviously, are massive to be able to just maintain those roadways, and there's multiple examples of that across the country here. We just rebuilt in the D.C. area the Woodrow Wilson Bridges, which carry Interstate 95 across the Potomac River, and the cost of that project was $2.3 billion with everything that was attendant to doing that. And it took out a major bottleneck, but the cost is massive versus what it was when it was originally built. That's the kind of thing we're facing.
Karen in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Hi, thanks. And maybe you've answered this now, but I remember hearing a story on NPR several years ago that there were people who were complaining that there were national dollars, you know, in the fund, whatever that's called, that were just sitting there and not being released for projects. With what you're saying about them running in deficits, I'm wondering what happened with that national fund, and was it really that large a fund just a few years back, and then things changed, or what happened to that?
I think I can go ahead and answer that. Sure. What we're referring to is the Highway Trust Fund, which was created back in 1956 when the interstate system was created along the Bayfort. What you're referring to is absolutely true. During the period of the, somewhere from the 70s through 1998, the Congress constrained the amount of money artificially that could be taken out of the fund year over year. And the reason for that was really in part to indirectly offset the deficit. Consequently, in 1998, when the thing called the T21 legislation, the massive highway bill, transit bill, for 6 years there, the money was actually legislated and required to be released, so that we were using everything we had, which was fine until we got to the next bill in 2005, where the Congress concluded that it wasn't going to raise the user fees or taxes, and that it was going to authorize every possible dollar that conceivably could be supported by the fund. And in the meantime, we've had a major recession and some other problems. And lo and behold, we've been spending more out of that fund, that balance declining, starting in 2004, which brought us to 2008, where we hit the wall. So you're absolutely correct. However, that was rectified in 1998, and unfortunately, the pendulum went the other way and went right to the limits and passed the limits and caused the need to actually subsidize.
Karen, thanks for your call.
May I ask?
Well,
I was wondering what funds go into that fund. Where does the money come from that I realize isn't adequate at this point? But what money is going into that fund?
I'd be happy to answer that. You actually and I pay a lot of that money. The 90% of what comes into the fund is from gasoline tax and diesel fuel tax, mainly the commercial trucks and things of that nature. Another about 5% comes from a sales tax on 18-wheel vehicles. And then the rest is such things as taxes on excise taxes on tires and so forth make up about the last 4 or 5% of the whole thing. Well, let me convert that to a number so you get an idea of what are we talking about. That's all well and good. What does it mean? It means that we take in about $36 billion a year out of all of those sources. And we're paying out right now about $41 billion a year.
Peter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot, Karen, for that call. The primary funding mechanism, the federal gas tax, hasn't increased since 1993.
Correct. It has not increased since 1993.
What kinds of conversations are going on to address that and perhaps increase the gas tax?
Well, let me talk about our organization. We represent all the state departments of transportation across the country. We have been advocating for the last 4 or 5 years that there be an increase in the gas tax and relatively immediately, and we have advocated as much as 15 cents a gallon. More importantly, though, than us, obviously, we represent a group. There were two national commissions, the National Transportation Revenue Policy and Revenue Study Commission and the National Transportation Finance Commission, both chartered by Congress, who concluded that we needed to, on an immediate basis, raise the federal gas tax 25 cents a gallon to boost our investment from about $90 billion a year at all levels of government to about $225 billion a year, just to deal with the backlog of things that need to be done and start to add some capacity where it's necessary. So we've been advocating. Many people have advocated. Right now, though, the politics, particularly in the federal level, are such that taxes are just not – they're a non-starter.
Well, that's particularly a problem in Ohio that's called a non-starter in the state of Ohio. Is that pretty typical around the country, too, at the state level?
In many states, yes, although there are probably 8 or 9 states that have either raised taxes or raised fees around the country. But it's generally pretty typical. You know, I think.
The governor of Ohio is looking at a variety of non-tax revenue enhancers, including toll roads, private investment, commercializing non-interstate rest areas. Is that a common consideration across the country, those sorts of things?
Yes. In fact, we in AASHTO put out a report in our recommendations that included a whole matrix of different things that could be done, ranging from gas tax to tolling to sales taxes, all kinds of different possible revenue sources. And they're being looked at. I know the state of Maryland, for example, I'm citing this because I got it fresh in my head, that the governor just yesterday, I believe, said that he would like to see something like a 6% sales tax on motor fuels, which is not on it right now, to dramatically increase the investment there. And you see things like this flashing across the country.
With so many electric vehicles and fuel-efficient cars on the road now, is there talk, increasing talk or talk at all about switching to a vehicle user tax to fund ground transportation infrastructure or something like that?
Yeah, there's quite a discussion, quite a bit of research that's been done on a thing called VMT, or vehicle mile travel fees, which would be, if you think of it like your electric bill, instead of kilowatt hours, you'd have basically the mileage that you run up charged at a rate to be established and get a bill just like you get a utility bill. There's been a lot of discussion about that. There is a lot of discussion. It has pros and cons. The pros are it obviously would take care of the question of alternative fuel vehicles, you know, paying for the roads. The cons are there's a lot of concern about privacy issues and other things surrounding those types of applications. And it would take probably several years to implement such a system because it really is a massive switch from what we do today. And when I say that, what I'm saying is the federal government collects from the refiners basically the federal gas tax, and the states do too largely. There are about 1,100 of them around the country. If you went to a VMT system where they got to bill you and me, we're talking about finding a way to bill about 120 million people on a regular basis. A little different issue.
Richard in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you. I used to be a transportation official in Illinois, And about 30 years ago, we got a tax increase through the legislature, and besides moving legislators' projects up and advertising it as a number of jobs that each penny was worth, we had the contractors and the unions twisting arms, too, because they're regular political donors. But what I was wondering is, has there been any talk of changing from a pennies per gallon to a percentage of dollars gasoline user fee? Or alternately, how many pennies are really needed? I heard that addressed a little earlier.
Well, let me start, Richard, by working backwards. The penny a gallon federal level brings in about $1.8 billion per penny, so it's a lot of money. States, it varies widely depending on, you know, the sales volumes and so forth. On the other question, one of the things that we had done some work on here at AASHTO as a proposal was switching to basically a sales tax approach. So, and the advantage of that, obviously, is as dollars go up, the revenue increases in tandem with it. To do such a thing, you'd have to have probably a ceiling and a floor because you wouldn't want it bursting out of control. Some states have done that. The state of Georgia has a sales tax. State of Pennsylvania does on their oil sales and so forth. It generates quite a bit of revenue. So.
Thanks, Richard, for that call. Going forward, what sort of research do you have? We're running out of time, Peter, but on what the cost is going to be long term to not go forward with so many of these projects, to just let them sit in terms of just the infrastructure itself and collapsing.
Yeah, well, let me just give some quick antidotes. Mm-hmm. I think if these commissions were right, we've got a gap that 225 to 90 were about something like about $135 billion a year. Short, which means a whole lot of things are not going to get done in terms of dealing just with the state of good repair issue. Secondly, coupled with that, particularly in the urban areas, congestion, anybody who's experiencing it knows it's getting worse really by the month. And that has a productivity loss, it has time loss, it has fuel cost losses, have all of those things, which is, we don't have enough time for me to run through a lot of statistics.
Right.
Those are the topics, I think.
Okay. Peter Basso, Director of Finance and Management for the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.